Welcome. It is great to see you all. My name is Daryl, and thank you for joining us for another week. I get excited on a Sunday morning because we get to come together and we get to seek to understand God just that little bit more. Over the past 4 weeks, we've been trying to look at how does faith and life interact with each other, and we've summed it up with God and the greatness of life. We acknowledge that at times, life is hard. It's difficult. It's not easy. We acknowledge that depression, anxiety, and loneliness are very real things. And I've been encouraged that as a church, from time to time, we need to talk about them. And we need to start to reframe how we think about some of these issues. I must say that after last week, a few people had been speaking to me about the depression that they have either been going through personally or watching family members go through. And I want to thank you for those who shared a story with me and shared those struggles. And I want you to know that those stories had me in tears, because one of the common elements was that the church hadn't talked about it, or if they had, they've done so in a very unhelpful way. We need to talk about these things, because there are more people in here than you would realize going through these battles. So let me ask, are you a worrying person? Do you worry, or at least feel like you spend 75% of your time worrying? Are you one of those worrying people, if you don't have something to worry about, you find something to worry about, or you worry about something that you shouldn't worry about, or maybe you invent something to worry about? I love this passage in Mark. For me, when the disciples are standing in that same boat with Jesus, right? They should have nothing in the world to worry about, and yet they worry. They were with Jesus and they worried. We worry. So they say that worry is an expression of stress. So, let's have some audience participation. How do you cope with stress? What are your stress-eating strategies? Chocolate. Yes. Walking. Yes. Come on. Who else has got a... crying? Crying at a little ball. I love it. Playing the piano really loudly and really bad, like just going for it, just like hammering on those keys. I can't hammer on the keys. I'm gonna hammer on the keys. Yes, yes. What else? Coffee with friends. Oh, very quiet. I'm creating stress in you right now, aren't I? He's going to ask me a question soon. Man, strategies for coping with these stress and anxieties are important. Do you know that constant chronic worrying and stress can cause actual serious physical problems? Ulcers, heart attacks, high blood pressure. Dr. Charles Mayo of the famous Mayo Clinic wrote, "Worrying affects the circulation, the heart, the glands, and the whole nervous system. I've never met a man or known a man to die of overwork, but I have known a lot who died of worry." And we can literally worry ourselves to death. That being said, I think there's a difference here. I think there is a certain level of stress, worry, anxiety that we live. In fact, I think some of us need that stress and anxiety. Take the uni student. They do their best work at the 11th hour, right? The exam, the essays due at midnight. How many essays have you been working up to 11:59? Too many, isn't that right, Richard? No, never. Rich is like, I'm always organized. Got it down. I went to uni with friends who had to wait to that last minute because they needed that extra stress as a motivation. For me, it was crippling. Yeah? Like, I don't want to be waiting to the 11th hour to do my essay. But worrying is it's a normal part of life. It can be helpful in some instances. It can motivate. It can help us to focus our energy. It's okay in the short term. Some people find worry and stress exciting. I think those people are the ones who are about to go bungee jumping or skydiving, because I would be worried and stressed and anxious that something would go catastrophically wrong. We often worry about things in our present lives, finances, how our work is going, our family. And sometimes we use these worries, these stress, to help us make good decisions in our lives. But it is possible for worry to tip over, to become more confronting, more emotional, more than everyday little worries. If you are experiencing worries that are excessive, uncontrollable, if you worry about irrational things, and if you've been experiencing these worries for extended periods of time, you might be suffering from general anxiety disorder. See, anxiety is more than stress. It's distress. Distress about an uncertain future, whether near or distant, whether real or imaginary. We feel anxious because we feel vulnerable, inadequately prepared for whatever they may be. We feel the threats of social rejection or physical injury or disease. We might be anxious over poverty and death or a wide range of other things. But I think if we boil it down to three elements, you will find this at the center of anxiety. You're insecure about something. When I say insecure, I mean you feel like something bad is about to happen, no matter what it is. Not only do you feel insecure, I think at the center of anxiety, you feel helplessness. There is nothing that I can do to get out of this particular point. And the third one, I think, is isolation. No one can help me. And just like depression, anxiety can leave us handicapped. Last week we looked at the Bible and we looked at all the people who, we didn't look at all the people because there's a lot more, but we looked at some of the people who have suffered through depression, and the Bible has people who suffer from anxiety as well. Although they don't necessarily use the word for chronic or temporary anxiety, writers do experience periods of great worry, of unease, of even angst. And like last week, we don't have enough time to list every biblical case for someone who experiences anxiety, but let me give you three quick examples. And again, we start with King David. We noticed last week that he wrote many of the Psalms, both positive and the Psalms of great struggle. In those Psalms of great struggle, David is calling out to God in times of great distress. In other words, David is calling out to God why he's feeling anxiety and anxious. I mean, if you want to know what anxiety is, look at the story of David. King Saul was trying to have David killed because David had been named as the next king. You want to be anxious? Try running for your life. I bet you that bumps the anxiety scale up a few notches, yeah? Next we have Daniel. My clicker stopped working. Daniel had visions, and they were quite confronting and terrifying visions. In Daniel 8:27, after some of these visions, we know that Daniel fainted and he laid sick in bed for days. In the previous chapter, he had his mental state described as troubled in spirit. What's that a picture of? He's feeling so much anxiety in his life that he can't get out of bed. And these were simply visions that he saw. He saw what the future held and what was terrifying, the rulers and the powers that would take hold of the future. It disturbed him and it rendered him unable to do much for several days. And the last example I want to point out is someone who felt anxiety and anxiousness is Jesus himself. In Luke 22, and being in anguish, he prayed more earnestly and his sweat was like drops of blood falling to the ground. This is an actual thing. Doctors have discovered, I don't know if that's the right word, but they have a term, hemetrogenesis, where your stress causes the blood vessels in your brain, in your head to split open and like leak with sweat. And it's linked to one's flight or fight response. At this particular moment, when Jesus is praying with the extreme distress, anxiety, and fear that he is feeling, he sweats droplets of blood. Imagine feeling that amount of stress that the blood vessels in your skin start to pop. Paul talks about anxiety. We heard it a little bit earlier, so professionally read. Philippians 4:6. Do not be anxious about anything. It's the verse that a lot of people love to quote when we are talking to someone who is going through anxiety. Whether it be temporary or chronic. Now, I think we repeat this verse for one of three reasons. One, we want to encourage the person that we are talking to that God is in control no matter what the current circumstances look like. And that is a great thing to remind each other, right? The other thing is we want to remind the believer that we need to put our mind on the things of heaven rather than our earthly worries. Man, that's another great lesson right there. Man, it looks bad here, but on the other side, man, how much better is it going to be? But there's a third way I think we can use this verse. And for some of us, it's a get-out-of-jail-free card. We use it to put an end to the conversation that we find difficult or awkward to navigate. Because it does make us feel uncomfortable, right? When someone says to you, I feel anxious. The truth is, we say this verse to make ourselves feel better. but it can leave the other person feeling worse. I've tried, but it doesn't feel like it's working. In the Bible, we see people who experience anxiety. And as Christians, we should know what the scripture says about anxiety in general. Like we said, we can quote that Philippians 4:6. We can reassure each other about God's control. But what else does the Bible have to say? Well, first, it can give us some examples of how people confronted their anxieties. For instance, whenever David felt anxious, he cried out to God. In Psalm 13:5, he acknowledges God's power and plan in the midst of his suffering and pain. David goes, let's reframe this, right? I might feel anxious. I might be full of anxious thought, but I know that you are God, and God, you are good, and I'm going to try and put my trust in you, even if it feels like the opposite is what is going on. David says, I trust in you. In addition to how we can use the Bible and the examples to deal with anxious thoughts, we can also use the Bible for guidance when it comes to anxiety. In 1 Peter 5:7, Peter encourages Christians to cast all their cares on God. Why? Because God cares for them, for you, for me, for the person next to you, for the person with bad O that you're behind in Woolworths. God cares about them. And one of the practices we need to learn is that we've got to give our worries to God, knowing that He will work it all out for good. Jesus Himself says, come to me, all who are burdened. And those burdens are the things that make us weary. Those anxieties and stresses are those burdens that make us weary. And Jesus says He will give us rest. These verses indicate that our first port of call as people of faith, as Christians, is to say, God, I give it to you. To hand those burdens over, and in exchange, God will give peace. The problem is that it's not an instantaneous peace, but it's a learned peace. It's a peace that we can experience over time by constantly doing it. See, here's what I find interesting. If we look at our passage today and we take a close look at what's going on, and if we look at the interaction between Jesus and his disciples, if we look at that furious squall that came over and the waves broke over the boat, so much so that the boat is being swamped, and Jesus is in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples cry out to him in their anxiety, don't they? Teacher, don't you care if we drown? The disciples cast their worries on Jesus. They do it from time to time. Hey, Jesus, I don't think we have enough food to feed these 5,000 people, so tell them to go away into the neighboring towns so they can get something to eat. Jesus takes their fear and their anxiety and their worry, He gets up, he rebukes the wind and says to the waves, "Be quiet, be still," and the wind dies down and it's completely calm. He says to his disciples, "Why are you afraid?" One commentator I read about that particular phrase was pointing out what the point of saying, yeah, you have the Son of God in the boat, right? The one who has been casting out demons and, you know, doing all those crazy things, and you're afraid he's going to, like, die in a storm? But I want to put to you that half of what the disciples felt, half of that anxiety is because of the thoughts going on in their head. Remember the three main elements? They felt insecure and hopeless, right? Who here, like, in the middle of a storm, feels like they can control the storm? Right? And not only that, they felt isolated. Why? Because they're in the middle of a lake. Not like someone's going to swim out and save them. They're feeling those three elements: insecure, hopelessness, and isolation. See, for me, these negative thought patterns get into our head, right? And these negative thoughts take root, and we start to distort them. And we go over them and we distort them a little bit more. It's like the old VHS tape, right? You know that one you've watched a million, all these young people are like, what's a VHS? Right? But you remember when you've watched that VHS tape and it's stretched a little bit and the picture goes, you know what I'm talking about? We do this. We go over and over and over that situation and go, it's worse than it is. It's worse than it is. It's worse than it is. Now, look, I have very little doubt that the storm was bad, right? I know the storm was bad. I mean, like, if you're getting a boat swamped, it is bad. But we do have a tendency to make fear bigger than it actually is. One of the ways I think we need to approach our anxiety is to challenge the fear and ask if it is true. And then we can see if we can take back control. I want to give you a personal example. This week I had to go get some inoculations for my Indonesia trip. Now, I have a great relationship with the person who likes to stab me. But I hate blood tests. Like, right now, my anxiety levels are increasing. Hopefully, yours aren't too bad. I mean, I hate having my blood tested with a passion, right? Because I know how the conversation's going to go, especially if they don't know me. I walk in, and the technician will say, "All right, oh, yes, okay, just take a seat," and I'll go, bed. Bed. And they'll look at me and go, "A big, brave boy like you wants the bed." And I'm like, "Yep. Let me tell you why." In my mind, a negative thought pattern starts to take root. Oh, Daryl, hey, you remember that time that you had a blood test and you you said to the guy, "I don't feel well," and he's like, no, you're fine," and you're like, no, "I'm gonna faint," and he's like, no, you're fine," and then you pick up on the ground. Do you remember that time? Yes, I do. Stop it. Do you remember how they didn't listen to you when you said you're going to feel faint? Yes, I remember. Well, look at this person, man. Like, they're not going to be able to catch you. All right. Shh. And my mind starts going back to that moment and I start to feel woozy. And like, they haven't even got the needle out yet. And I'm woozy. Bed, thanks. And then they start going through the process. Oh, what's your name? What's your date of birth? And taking down all that information. And my mind's going, it's coming. And then I start to think about the needle going in. Are you feeling anxious as I am right now? No, it's just me. It's okay. the negative mindset starts to shape what is going on. Oh, this is going to hurt. This is going to be painful. And I've learned, right, I have to cut those thoughts off, right? So I've got a great relationship with my technician, with my stabber. She heard that my voice outside and went, oh, great. First thing she says to me is, hop on the bed. I ask for the bed. Why? Because it removes one of my fears of fainting, falling on that person. I discovered something. When you're having your blood test, you don't watch the blood coming out. You look away. Right? Takes away some of the... No, stop. Anxiety. And then I start to talk about anything and everything. Right? Anything that I can to get my mind off what is going on. I focus then on just trying to breathe at a regular rate. And my fifth way I try and cope is I try and get it done first thing in the morning when there's hardly anyone in the doctor's offices. So that way if I faint, few people will know.
Did you faint?
No. I've discovered things going in, easy, things going out, not so easy. Man, I've had to start rearranging some of those thoughts, right? And stop looking at the facts, and they're not in line with reality. Man, how many of us go, oh, my boss hates me. And then someone says, oh, why do they hate you? Oh, because they asked me a question. Was the question bad? No, but they asked me a question. If they ask me a question, our negative thought pattern kicks in, right? Oh, that means they don't trust my work. Or that means that they have a question. Or that means that someone said something. Right? We get into this negative thing and it starts getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Oh, they doubt my ability. I must have done something wrong. We work ourselves up. And you know what? Turns out, when you break it down, the boss just wanted an update on whatever it was you were working on. Do you get what I'm saying? We can take things and blow them out of proportion. Our perception can be wrong. Here's another way of looking at it. Who here can remember the most embarrassing thing that happened to them when they were at school? Can you remember something? Sorry? How many do you want? All right, let me ask you this question. How many can remember the most embarrassing moment our Year 7 English teacher had? Can anyone? No? Oh, okay. Let me ask this. Can I ask you, can you remember one of your best mates, best friends, what's the most embarrassing thing that happened to them? Anyone got anything? You got something? Chances are, if we were to go find your friend and ask them, they would say something different, right? Like, we blow these things up in our mind. They're so embarrassing, right? Most people... Yeah, they have a chuckle in the event, and then it's forgotten about. I don't think anyone remembers the most embarrassing thing that's happened to me. Fainting when I had my blood test. I fainted once when I was getting my hair cut, but that's a different story for another day. My most embarrassing moment didn't happen at school. One Christmas, I bought my dad and my brother cricket tickets. So we went to the Gabba to watch cricket, yeah? And I had something really bad to eat the night before. And I had like food poisoning. And I couldn't stop throwing up. And then my pants ripped from here to here. So... My dad and my brother are over there watching the cricket, and I'm up on the concourse, and I'm throwing up into a bin, and my pants are ripped, and everything, like my undies, like. And then the police start to surround me. Right, The gates have only just opened. Oh, this guy's intoxicated already. That was my most embarrassing moment. But you can't remember that in 2 days. It's on the website forever. Fantastic. Yeah. If you ask my dad and my brother about that event, do you know what they'll say? It was disappointing because we had to go home early. They don't care about my embarrassment or my perceived embarrassment. So here's what we can do. When we're going through periods of anxiety, we can remember that God cares about us. We can look at other people, including Jesus, who had great periods of stress and anxiety. We can try and understand our thought patterns and try to break out of the negative ones. We can have conversations with people so we can get a different perspective. But as Christians who are not currently dealing with anxiety, Scripture encourages us to bear one another's burdens. Our mission, if you will, is that when a fellow brother or sister comes and they share the struggles of what the future hold, we as Christians should walk alongside them. That we should seek to provide comfort and peace during volatile moments in life. During such times, we should seek to bring comfort to those who are going through these things. We should encourage them. You can do it. And we've got to own up to it. We all struggle with different things. And it never helps. It never helps to adopt a pharisaical attitude during this time. Oh, the reason you're not getting over this is because you're not praying hard enough. We need to provide whatever needs our brothers or sisters have. Perhaps their fears and anxieties are real issues. They're worrying about where their next meal will come from. We know that God promises to provide the needs of his people, but he often does this through other believers. We need to walk alongside each other during struggles. And we need to face it. One time or another in our lives, we will need the love and support ourselves. In fact, there might be even people here right now who need someone to simply support them. Again, I want to point out that anxiety and suffering from anxiety and suffering from depression, right? Prayer is a key and central point. But we can take it further. We can go and start having conversations. We can go and talk to your GP. We can go find a counselor. Simply finding a friend. You talked about going for coffee, sharing coffee with someone and asking the hard question, hey, how are you really going? It can help our brains. It can challenge our thought patterns. And we can accept that we are not in control of everything, right? It's one of the greatest ways of confronting anxiety. It helps put your stress in perspective. Is it really as bad as you think it is? And again, I come back to eat well, move more, and get sleep. It's so helpful. Another way of combating some anxiety in our life, especially around the workplace, is to do your best. See, some of the times we aim for perfection, which isn't possible. But if we aim to do our best, to put in our 110%, you can't do 110%, but You get what I'm saying, though. If we say, I'm going to do the best that I can and work as hard as I can and get as close as I can, then we can walk away saying, you know what? I've done my best. I cannot do any more. And we need to welcome humor in our lives. We need to laugh. A good laugh goes a long way. That's why I shared the most embarrassing thing, so hopefully you laughed. We need to try and maintain a positive attitude. We need to start finding those negative thought patterns and start replacing them with positive ones. You know, another way to help with anxiety and depression is to get involved with the community, to do something. Be active. Be outside of your smaller circles. It builds a support network. It gives you a break from everyday stresses and gives you a whole series of new ones. But we can also learn what triggers our anxieties. Is it work? Is it family? Is it school? Is it something else you can identify? When I first got married, I used to have these periods of great anxiety, and they usually came at the end of the pay cycle, pay week, right? You've all been there, right? The end of the pay cycle, the fridge is bare. You know, like there's the bare minimum in there, right? I grew up with parents who didn't treat money that well. And there were times when, you know, we needed things like, you know like what we do out here, what we used to do out here, the food hampers. Man, I have memories of kids, salvos knocking on the door with food hampers. And it created anxiety within me, right? That, oh no, I'm not doing enough for my family. I'm not providing enough money. There's not enough. I'm not bringing home the bacon. And then this beautiful woman that I know said to me, do you understand that it's just the end of the pay cycle? The groceries are coming? Oh. See, my perception of the event didn't line up with reality. And when I stepped outside and explained to someone how I felt, they were able to help me to see, hey, this is how it always is at the end of the pay cycle. Another way that you can work through some of your stresses and anxiety is to keep a journal and to look for patterns. And when you start to see the patterns, you can start praying again and praying more, praying those 5-minute prayers that Richard was talking about. God, I feel anxious, but I know that you love me and I know that you care. God does care. So, as I finish, I've had a very generous offer from someone in the congregation who wants to get up and share some of their anxieties, some of the things that they've been dealing with. And they've asked me to, I don't know if they've asked me, but I want to say this is not a pity party. They're coming up to share how God has been interacting with their struggles, with their greyness. So if I can get the recording to stop...